तुंड महाकाय सूर्यकोटि समप्रभा निर्विघ्नं कुरु मे देव सर्वकार्येषु सर्वदा सरस्वती नमस्तुभ्यं वरदे कामरूपिणी विद्यारम्भं करिष्यामि सिद्धिर्भवतु मे सदा समस्त जन कल्याणे निरतं करुणामयं नमामि चिन्मयं देवं सद्गुरुं ब्रह्मविद्वरं गुरुर्ब्रह्मा गुरुर्विष्णुः गुरुर्देवो महेश्वरः गुरुर्साक्षात् परं ब्रह्म तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः।
Meditation is about being. We all know about doing, and we think about doing, and we talk about doing, and thinking itself is doing. But very rarely do we think about being. So I want to speak with you a little bit about that this morning. See, in Sanskrit language, like in any other language, there is this most wonderful verb, which is to be. And it's a very peculiar verb for a number of reasons. One reason is, if I say any other verb, if I say walk, then you know what to do. If I say laugh, you know, sit, eat, go, come, these are all verbs, na? Then you know what to do. But the verb to be, if I say be, then you say be what? So you don't know what to do. So it is the only verb that is not a doing verb. Another reason why it is a very peculiar verb is that it is the verb that is necessary for any other verb to occur. Only if I am, then I can laugh. Only if I am already, then I can go or come or eat or whatever, isn't it? If I am not, if that verb is not present, then other verbs are not possible, isn't it? It means to say that I can very well do without the eating or the going or the coming or the laughing or whatever it is, but without being, I cannot do. And there will be no me, isn't it? From that second point of view, you know, that itself proves that my nature is being. I am being, and then after that I am the other things. Basically, I am being first and foremost. So meditation is about staying in that state of being. Or meditation is about being. Now the being word there now is used both as noun and verb. So let me conjugate that verb a little bit. We say, I am, you are, he, she or it is. This is what you have to think. So, again, it is the first person which is important. I am. It was. On top, I mean. So, first, I am. And only if I am, then I can ascertain you are, he, she, or it is. So again, it becomes, I am primary, isn't it? I am primary, that first person, singular, primary form of the verb. Now, mind is such, our mind is such that it never wants to stay in that first person singular. What mind does? Mind likes to go and inquire into this thing, look there, search there, get attached there. Find some little bit of happiness there. So mind doesn't want to stay and remind itself, I am. Because remember that is what? First person, present tense. Mind doesn't like present tense. It likes past tense and future tense. Second thing, this is what mind, I'm talking of mind now. Second thing, mind doesn't like anything real. It likes everything the things which are not real. Anything real, mind will have to give up its existence in favor of the real thing. So he doesn't want to give up. Who wants to give up their existence, you know? We'll give up anybody else's existence first. But we'll not give up our existence, you know. Like one, the pundit was telling one man, you must come here and do some seva, volunteer, and do some seva in this temple. Volunteering is good. You must volunteer. He said, and that man said, Panditji, I volunteer my wife. No, you cannot volunteer somebody else. You have to volunteer yourself, no? This person is quickly ready to sacrifice somebody else rather than sacrifice himself. This human being is, so mind is like that. This mind, it will not sacrifice itself. If it stays in the present moment, if it stays in that state, saying what? I am. Mind will dissolve and it doesn't like this. That becomes a suicide as though for the mind. So what it does? It escapes into the future or escapes into the past. One out of these two. And there it goes on reminiscing, goes on planning, all that sort of thing. So if it goes in the past, it is reminiscing. If it goes in the future, planning, calculating, analyzing, all such things. So meditation is about bringing mind in the present moment. It is, and where we come in the present moment, because it is first person, singular, present tense. When we come in that moment, we come to that most peculiar and wonderful verb, which is that verb of being. There is where mind dissolves in that state. And that state is what we call as meditation. Now there is something which is called as the verb to meditate. That is one thing. That is a verb. And then there is something called as meditation. Meditation is not a verb. Meditation is a noun. In dictionary, if you see meditation, next to it you see N. It means noun. So noun is not something that you do. Like table. You cannot do table. You cannot do a noun. So that state of meditation is not something that you do. It is a state that we reach. But then there is also the verb to meditate. So that verb really involves all the things that we do as preparation before getting into that state. All those things which we do as preparation before, that is called as the verb to meditate. Like you sit properly, you concentrate, you bring the thoughts, all which we will see just now. That is called to meditate. But the state which is reached thereafter, that state is called as meditation. So meditation is a state. It's a noun. It is not a verb. And it's a state of absolute quietude, a state of pure being, state of presence, state of actionlessness, all of these things. And it is the peculiar state because it is at the same time a noun and a verb also. To be is the only verb that also ends up as a noun. It is because being also is a noun and being also is a verb. Being is like human being. That is why we are called human being. Actually, that's our primary state. We are human beings. We are not human doings. And only because we are human beings first, then we can do something. So we'll find out then this verb to meditate and what it involves. So many number of things now it involves. Lord Krishna describes all of them in Bhagavad Gita in 6th chapter. Very simply he gives, very straightforward manner. So the first thing about meditation, or this meditating, is we have to get the posture correct. So he says we must all sit up straight like that, our neck and head and spine in one straight line. Samam kaya shiro grivam, he says. So getting the posture. And that also sthiram, achalam. So the first thing about meditation is to get the posture. But even though Lord Krishna doesn't give anything before that, saints and sages say that there are a few things before that even to consider. So one is, they say that we should choose some quiet spot, you know, in the house. You don't go meditate in the kitchen. When everybody's walking by and all nice smells are coming there also. Scents are coming from the kitchen. So you find some quiet corner of the house. Other thing is, better you do it before everybody gets up. Because even if it is a quiet corner of the house and everybody is waking, children will be making noise. House will be making noise. Spouse will be making noise. Where are you? One teacher is asking the little boy in the class, "Where is God?" That little boy says, "God is in our bathroom." "Bathroom? How do you know God is in the bathroom?" He says, "Well, every morning when my father gets up, he pounds on the bathroom door and he says, 'God, you're in there again?'" So, when you wake up in the morning and everybody is up, somebody will be pounding somewhere, making some noise or something, isn't it? So better you get up early. So first thing is a time and place. You choose some quiet time and some quiet place in that house. And there, he says, Bhagavan says, in Gita, you put a little seat. Natyuchritam na ati nicham. Na ati uchritam na ati nicham. Meaning to say, don't make any high seat, you know. Because if you go into samadhi, you may fall over. sleep, and that is more likely. if you fall asleep while meditating, you may topple over. And don't make any seat too low also, he says. This was in the old days. You can make a low seat. In the old days, they used to meditate in caves, and so it used to be a little bit off the ground, so, you know, crawling ants and insects and all that kind of thing. And they tell, first you spread some kusha grass, and then you spread some deer skin, and then on top of that you spread some cloth, and then you sit on that thing. So some people use that as a very convenient excuse not to meditate. Because where will I get a deer skin in these days? One man was telling Gurudev, "That is exactly why I do not meditate." Because Bhagavan said you have to have kush grass, deer skin, cloth. Cloth is okay. So, don't pay too much of attention to the... What is that? We concentrate too much on the candles and not on the funeral. They say. I don't know. They say in Trinidad. I don't know what they say here. You concentrate too much on the candles and forget the funeral. So no, these things have minimal effect. What it means is that you're trying to get maximum effect as possible, right? So they will contribute minimally, little bit. So if you cannot get it, don't worry too much about it, because of that little thing, now you don't meditate. So, seat and then sitting, the asana. This asana, this position is posture. That is very, very important. There is where the important thing starts. The seat and time and place and all of that. They'll contribute. Yeah. But where the important thing starts now is this posture. It is called as asana. In Sanskrit, the seat is also called as asana and the posture is also called as asana. Yogasanas, have you heard? Like that, yogasanas. So, this dhyana asana, the posture of meditation. So what is required is, the person is supposed... See, if you can't sit like this. Some people can't sit, no? Then okay, you sit on a chair or something. But the main thing is the spine should be straight and the head, neck and all in one straight line. No. When we do that, we cut off the oxygen supply to the head. That is why in Bhakti Marg they evolve. You know why? You cut off the blood to the head. Because in Bhakti Marg is a predominantly heart mark. You're communicating with Bhagavan through heart. You don't need so much of head. Huh? But in meditation, you need to go deep inside. You need head. So straight, he says, samam. So, second thing associated with that asana now, and this also, after getting this straight, take a vow for the next 20, 25 minutes or 30 minutes. 20 is least. 20 and up, that you will not shake or move even one limb. Now I tell you, in meditation, even to get this posture is such a big thing. To be able to sit for half an hour without shaking or moving a limb. And you know, what is my experience? Everybody moves limbs without even knowing. This leg will go on this leg. After a minute, this leg will go back on that leg. Then two legs will go this side. And two legs will go that side. And then, like that, in that half an hour, how many positions this person will take? So meditation requires one asana, not 20. Asana means that, yoga asana means that posture, no? So how many postures you have changed in meditation? Every time you move this leg is a different posture, isn't it? You're trying to reach oneness, so the posture itself should be one posture. To be able to sit there and not move for that half an hour is an achievement in itself. So what we have to do? If you're going to start on this course of meditation, on the first day, you do it for 5 minutes. Second day, you increase by 2 minutes. You can put an alarm clock also, it doesn't matter. And like that, you keep on increasing. Next day, 10 minutes. Next day, you say, I'll sit without moving. For 15 minutes, like that. Keep increasing until you have gotten it for half. It may not be done in a week. You might need a month, 2 months. That is okay. You don't worry. There is all the time in the world. You are not going anywhere. Jiva is not going anywhere. Jagat is not going anywhere. Bhagwan is not going anywhere. Nothing. Time is there. We will go and come back only. So don't get too anxious or too hasty or anything. Just be confident. Another thing is that the marga should also be comfortable and happy and peaceful and all. If all the time you are stressed and, oh, I'm not getting this, Swamiji said I should keep my back straight, you know. But my back keeps sagging. And then you get so worked up and worried and I'm not getting it. And 2 months I've been sitting and I can't even do 5 minutes. So that anxiety and worry itself will prevent you from moving forward. Don't get worried. See, one person may get it in a week. One person may take a year. But let me take that back. A year is too much. If you're taking a year to get half an hour of sitting without shaking, I think it is too long. 2 months. We should do it every day. Okay, so getting that asana. Right? Now, remember, what is our problem? Our problem is our mind never stays home. Home is Om. Mind never stays home. Mind goes everywhere. And even if you have succeeded now, see, after getting that posture and everything, and you have succeeded in bringing mind home, mind has some heavy artillery in its arsenal, you know. It pulls out that heavy artillery at that time, when you have brought it home. What is that? First piece of artillery in its storehouse there. Sleep. What it does? It goes to sleep. So, it escapes the waking state altogether. What to talk of meditation? So that time, what you do, you know, when you realize that, well, you will not realize until you have woken up, right? So when you wake up and you realize, oh, it had gone to sleep. So that day itself, that time itself, what you do? You plan that tomorrow I will be more vigilant and I will use some certain techniques. But here itself, in order to wake up the mind now that has just, or to keep the mind awake, what you can do is, you take a deep breath and you hold it for as long as you can hold. Anytime the mind feels like it's going to fall asleep, this is the technique. You take a deep breath and hold it for as long. People say, Swamiji, what if I die? I don't worry, it is not possible to die like that. Biologically, they say also, at some point, you may turn blue, but you will become weak from lack of breath, and you will let go by yourself. And even if you die in a good cause. Bhagavan says in Gita, if you die in a good cause, you go to Swarga. Swargam avapsasi, you get Swarga. So don't worry about it. So take a deep breath. One of the other things you can do is, before sitting in that seat of meditation, if you have a tendency to fall asleep, take a cold bath before sitting there. This is one more thing. See, all these are preliminary things, the things which I did not tell just now. Never sit for meditation without taking a bath. It will be very helpful. Taking a bath, and the rishis actually had all of these things nicely in place because of certain reasons, you know. See, the state of meditation, we said, is a state of pure being. So it is not a state of becoming, not a state of doing, not a state of going, coming, changing, none of that. It's a state of pure being. In fact, when we take a bath, you know, that itself brings the whole body to one uniform temperature. Right now, you see how much of this body is covered? This head is not covered. So the temperature of the head will be different from the temperature of the body. Now see, even here, like you are dressed, there is certain part of the body exposed and certain part covered. The parts exposed will have a different temperature than the parts covered. So there is variation in temperature in the body. So that is kind of antithetical to the state of absolute pure being. So at the bodily level itself, when I take a bath, I make a uniform temperature for the whole body. There itself, I start with bringing uniformity on the outer level. So immediately after taking that bath, when I have kind of, to some degree, brought a uniform temperature, uniform experience, because water flows on the whole body, uniform awareness of the entire body that time when we're taking a bath, because we're putting soap on the toes, on the head. Otherwise, many times we are not aware of many parts of our body and all. That breath itself helps us to be aware of the whole body. So there's uniform awareness of the whole body. There's uniform temperature of the whole body also. So its uniformity starts stepping in at the state of at the point of breath itself. And this is what we're trying to achieve inside also, uniformity of being. You see? So never sit there without taking a bath. So now, we are trying to be in that state, and the mind uses all its, you know, powers now to take us away from that state. So the one thing is, it falls asleep. So we hold the breath, or we get up and take another cold bath. Or we tell the mind, oh, so you've been behaving badly, eh? Now, I know you don't like to sit here and be quiet and be in the state of being. So what we'll do? Now I'll make you sit here and take this japa mala, and I'll make you do now 9 rounds of mala. And not no short mantra, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya. That will be done in 10 minutes. I'll make you do 9 rounds of mala, of Gayatri mantra. Om Bhur Bhuvasvah Tat Savitur Vareenyam Bhargo Devasya Dhimahi Dhiyo Yona Prachodayat. One beat. And if you behave badly, I will chant more slowly. Om Bhur Bhuvasvah Tat Savitur Vareenyam Bhargo Devasya Dhimahi Dhiyo Yona Prachodayat. One beat. It will take half a day. You have to be able to threaten the mind like this also. Nothing makes the mind aware like threat. It becomes totally aware. And you may not, well, first thing, you have to have the power to carry the threat through also. Yeah? Carry through with the threat. You can't just make the threat and then don't do anything. Then mind would have won. Mind wins you once, you're in trouble. Huh? So, looking for the tricks of the mind, falling asleep, then wandering into the future, into the past, roaming here and there, all of these things. Huh? The only way it will stop all of this wandering and roaming and going here in the past and future and all that is if we have deep vairagya, deep dispassion. I am detached from this thing or that thing. Now, this deep dispassion of vairagya also is not acquired in a day. Detachment you can't acquire in a day. And it is acquired by a lot of reflection, contemplation, a lot of what we call as viveka, discrimination. Now, really, why the mind runs out, you know? Why it goes into the past or future or here or there, it is because the mind has made a wrong analysis and judgment as to the locus or location of happiness. This is the basic and fundamental problem. The mind has made a wrong analysis and conclusion as to the locus of happiness. It has concluded wrongly, erroneously, that happiness lies in things of the world. Happiness lies outside. And it has done that for too long. And so it keeps going, thinking, I'll get a little bit of happiness there, I'll get a little bit of happiness there. If this happens, that will be great, you know. Or that thing that we had, you know, we had gone to such and such place, that was superb. So that is past. And future, when I get this thing, when that is over, when that is done, I will be fine. So the mind has for too long, for too many lifetimes upon lifetimes, the mind has learned this art of being happy because of. It has never learned the art of being happy in spite of. So I'm happy because I got this. I'm happy because I went there. I'm happy because I will have an opportunity to go to that place. I'm happy, I will be happy because next month I will get my check in the mail. Or whatever. So it's always because. Happy because of it. So the mind has to now learn to be happy in spite of anything. In fact, that is the only permanent and lasting happiness. Any happiness because of is only temporary. And second thing, when it goes, it leaves a bad taste of, and a bitter taste of misery. Because if I'm happy because of that thing, sooner or later that thing will be taken. That is the nature of the world. Nothing stays forever. Sooner or later that thing will be taken. And when it is taken, I will be absolutely miserable. You see? So learning to be happy by myself, with myself, through myself, in myself, I am okay, you know. I really do not need anything in this world. I'm fine. People say, yeah, but you need food. You need to. We say, yes. I need a little bit of food to survive. But I eat for survival, not for happiness. If the world eats for happiness, and that's why you have this whole big, what do you call, culinary art. We have. There's universities that teach culinary art and all that, isn't it? Big. The hospitality industry, it is all about satisfying people's appetite, isn't it? Because people eat for happiness. And the same eating brings misery later on, isn't it? Pretty soon. Same eating. So we eat for survival, not for happiness. Happiness is something else. Huh? So, learning to be happy with ourselves. That can only happen when I go inside and I find the source of happiness. So this is the same thing we are talking about this morning, which is called as meditation. Going inside and finding the source of happiness, the source of being. See, I'm free from any desire of becoming this, wanting that, chasing that, pursuing the other thing. I become free from all that and I stay in a state of pure shanti, peace. So meditation is about that. And watching for the tricks of the mind and all that. Alright. Okay, so now we'll try to practice this a little bit. I'll give some guidance. We'll go deeper inside. And we'll try to come to that state a little bit. Try as much as possible. Now, whatever you have to do in terms of shifting and finding your balance and keeping your legs and all things in a particular position, please do it now, because I have on my clock here 20 minutes. So for the next 20 minutes, tell your body, we will not move. Sit up straight. Sit at ease also. Don't sit up straight with tension. Try to be relaxed, stress-free. We'll try to intensify awareness by starting at the level of the body. This technique also helps to bring presence, to bring the mind closer to home. So what we do is a mental massage of the body. In order to do this, we take the mind to the toes and slowly we move all the way up to the head. Let us begin by bringing all of our attention on our toes. Then the soles of the feet. Ankles. The lower leg, calves, knees, thighs, bottom of the spine, lower back, belly, middle of the trunk between the belly and chest, upper back, chest. Keep the concentration on that part. Shoulders. Down to fingers, palms, wrists, lower arm. Elbows, upper arm muscles. Shoulders once more. Neck. Throat. Lower jaw. Ears. Mouth. Nose. Eyes. Forehead. Middle of the forehead between the eyebrows. Tip of the head. Entire head. Entire body. Relax the entire body. After this physical part, we move to physiological, the breath. The outer breath is connected to so many physiological functions inside. spend some time observing breath. In order to help with that observation, we'll do a few breathing exercises. I'll count from 1 to 4, and for that duration, we'll breathe in, we'll hold in, and on the count of 1, 2, 3, 4, again, for that duration, we'll breathe out. Again, the holding out. Now empty the lungs. Breathe in slowly, 1, 2, 3, 4. Hold in. Out slowly, 1, 2, 3, 4. Hold out. In slowly, 1, 2, 3, 4. Hold in. Out, 1, 2, 3, 4. Hold out. In, 1, 2, 3, 4. Hold in. Out, 1, 2, 3, 4. Hold out. In, 1, 2, 3, 4. Hold in. Out, 1, 2, 3, 4. Hold out. In, 1, 2, 3, 4. Hold in. Now breathe normally. Let breathing happen. But watch, observe closely every breath coming in and going out at the point of the nostrils. Don't miss any breath. Do not let any breath go unobserved. Keep the mind on the breath. Now we move even closer inwards. We go to the mind, where all thoughts and emotions are coming and going. In the mind, we chant Om Namah Shivaya. Sometimes it is good to chant loudly before chanting it silently in the mind. I'll chant loudly, you chant in your mind, listening to the sound at the same time. Silently, softly in the mind, chant the mantra with 100% concentration, as though the mantra were the only thing in the universe. Whichever mantra you like. Every sound of the mantra is born from silence. It veils the silence for a moment and slowly tapers off, disappears into silence. The sound of the mantra is fleeting, temporary. Background silence is permanent. Silence is the nature of the universe. Behind every frequency, behind every movement, behind every mantra, behind every thought, there is absolute silence. All these things come and go. Silence abounds. Mind will wander away. Bring it back on the mantra. And from the mantra, slowly again shift attention to the silence behind the mantra. The last stage is to let the mind do whatever it wants. You become an uninvolved witness. Don't judge. Don't scold. Don't regret. Let the mind do what it wants. You just watch. Many thoughts will come. Watch them all. Desires will come. The mind will start clamoring. Watch it clamor. Watching is the last act of doing. Watching dissolves into being all by itself. Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Hari Om Shri Guru Pyo Namaha Hari Om.
Half an hour.